Fans, we are back live with another edition of the Cheap Heat Productions Pro Wrestling Podcast. My name is Jack Kilby, Executive Vice President of Great North Wrestling. Pleased tonight to have a special guest on, a man who certainly knows what it means to get extreme and other areas as well. He not only was a play-by-play color announcer personality for Extreme Pro Wrestling based out of California, but also the very innovative and exciting entity that was Wrestling Society X on MTV. Of course, I'm talking about Chris Kloss. Chris, thanks for coming on tonight, sir.
Thank you, Jack. Good to be here with you and all your fans, my friend.
Well, we do appreciate your time, and I know a lot of the fans have been looking forward to this one. I'll start off, though. I find it's helpful when doing a career interview to ask about the basic question. Were you a fan of the business growing up? And if so, what did you follow companies territory-wise, sir?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if I've ever ran into too many people. At least back in the day, I don't think I ran into too many people at all that were in it that weren't fans. The only ones that maybe were the exception were the girls that were getting into the business. That they weren't not quite as much. But for the most part, everybody was a big fan. And yes, I was a big fan. Of course, you know, I'm a child of the 80s. So, you know, of course, the rock and wrestling era, NWA, WCW. Also, I remember early education on we had some sort of satellite for a minute. We had that with my dad, and he was watching World Class early mid 80s. And so, you know, we remember watching that, my sister, my dad, and I, and it was like, what is this? You know, what is this? Is crazy. This is like, this is the real one. This one's the real wrestler, you know. And a little bit of AWA as well. But I remember really the World Class sticking out to me as far as being different from WWE and WCW. Mm-hmm, but yeah, oh, absolutely. Grew up in LA. Started going to house shows in the mid late 80s and at the LA Sports Arena. At one point in time, I had to be a part of this business. I had to be on the other side of the curtain. I just infatuated with the whole thing, you know.
Was there kind of most of us that get involved, we have, you know, a very similar story, and we're about the same age too, so we have the same kind of reference points. But was there kind of a moment where you went, boom, I'm going to do this, and this is how, or did it just kind of form?
Well, I know that at one point I just got to the point where, like, okay, Chris, that's the WWF guy, you know, in high school. It got to that point. I do remember, and I've shared this story before. I'll just be really quick. Going to a house show at the sports arena. So my family and I, we go to Laker games, Dodger games. We were at the sports arena, and on the way home, my mom says, hey, are you okay? I was like, yeah, why? And she says, well, I don't know. Something's a little off. And what do you mean? And she said, well, you're just looking, you weren't watching the action. You weren't paying attention. You were just looking around, like kind of daydreaming. And I was looking at the fans. And I remember this, like, I was so enamored with the fans. It looked exactly the same as if we were at a Laker game or a Dodger game. It looked exactly the same. And I was in awe that this wrestling thing is capturing these fans the same way a real sport was capturing them. And I was just like, I'm amazed. And I remember that the first show that I kind of like that out of body or out of box, thinking outside the box. And it was at that point where it's like, I want to know how this gets these people to do this the way a real sport does. I want to be on that side of the curtain. I couldn't tell you exactly when that was probably in the late 80s sometime. And I remember that was kind of that aha moment, you know, if, as far as wrestling goes.
Mm-hmm. So did you initially have your sights on an in-ring role, or where did you figure that you would fit into the matrix, so to speak?
I actually, for whatever reason, for the longest time, I would do a ladies and gentlemen and throughout the schoolyard, throughout in class. And so everybody's like, oh my gosh, you sound just like the Fink, you know? Ladies and gentlemen, this is Sting, you know, doing the Capetta. So I just kind of was like, oh, that'd be cool to stand out there and do that. And our friends. And so I kind of just thought it's for no rhyme or reason, just other than doing the announcing. And then I liked announcing. And I was getting into voiceover. So it was kind of like, that's where I would fit in the business. I never thought about being a wrestler. I never had a I should have been a wrestler. I just wanted to be a part of the industry, part of the business. And I wanted to be on the camera. I wanted to produce, though, too. I wanted to be a part of the inner workings of the storytelling and the feuds and all that, to a point. My production credits, my producing credits, like for WSX, for example, I was a part of the writing, but most of that was, let me interpret this to the audience with my play-by-play. But it was a little bit more than just play-by-play. It was, I'm now an associate producer, which I did on WSX. So that was a lot of fun. And that was, this is where I can execute my chops of what I've learned throughout the years of how this whole business works, and narrate it the way I'd like to at the same time, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Most of us from the golden era, the TV era, so to speak, the rock and wrestling era, wanted to, get right into the ring. It's interesting that you had a higher mind for the business even initially.
I guess, I mean, if that's what you want to call it, but I love the tongue in cheek. I love the psychology, but it didn't really matter to me whether I wrestled or announced, you know, type thing, as long as I was, because I think everyone's part of it, no matter where, what chess piece you are, you're part of this entity, this team that is going to go out there and represent our league, whatever it is at the time, our team. You know, we're a one football team, basketball team, playing another team, you know, the other opposing league, or the arena that we have to fill up, or the TV ratings we have to get. We're all on the team to do good at that, you know. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the performance aspect. I was like, I'm performing just as much as a wrestler is in the ring as Mr. Play-by-play guy, you know. I think I was performing just as much as anybody else, so I wasn't losing, oh man, I wish I was doing what they were doing. I'm fine with this is awesome what I'm doing, you know, kind of thing.
So how did you, when you landed on doing the announcing deal, how did you, or where did you go to seek the training that you needed for that role?
Oh my gosh. I mean, to be honest, I was self-taught. I was doing this in the schoolyard for a very long time. You know, I was paying my dues and had my practice, you know, and I always thought I was pretty funny, and my friends always, oh yeah, Chris is pretty funny, kind of. So I always knew I kind of got a comedy at a very early age. I remember finding an 8-track cassette of Red Fox live in concert at a very young age, when I wasn't supposed to know where that 8-track was.
8-track, there's a trip.
Yeah, right. Just that in general, but I remember like early on comedians like Gary Shandling, right? Who, why is this little kid into Gary Shandling? It's adult, not adult humor as far as blue humor, but a raunchy, but just the thought provoking humor. So I remember my mom, my dad, my mom kind of noticed, wow, look at, he's getting this humor. So I got that. And then I was practicing that at that point. Then you add like understanding, well, oh, look at Mean Gene. I know he's an act. Oh, and look how he's doing it. I got that at a very young age. So I was impersonating that a lot with my friends and all that. And we'd have mock up things. Now that's not going to be your all in all education, because I'm a mark. You know, I still have to get in the business. I have to understand the inner workings. I have to know what it means to protect the business. So, but as far as all that goes, that came naturally because I was practicing it for years. And then now I fine tune it once I get in there. Oh, okay, this is what I take out. This is what I put in. Because my first few matches I can't watch today was early XPW. I was like, ooh, I cringe, you know.
So how did you first meet the man behind XPW then and now, Mr. Rob Black? And what was your introduction to the company?
Well, we were doing out here in Southern California, we were doing something called Southern California Championship Wrestling. It was an indie league back when there really weren't indie leagues. I mean, really weren't any indie shows. There was a legendary place out in the Valley, San Fernando Valley, called Slammers Wrestling Gym. Yeah. Dynamite D, the great late Dynamite D, the late great, was part of it. He had a cable radio network radio TV show that was very rare. And he kayfabed. He was a kayfabe host. It was great. And he would promote Slammers. So it was a small, indescript location place. Boom. But they had this museum when you walked in. It was a car. It was an auto body shop with a little office in the garage. But the garage was made into a ring, arena with one row around it. By the garage door was a Hall of Fame. You had the Russians, Fabulous Moolah, Gorgeous George, all their actual robes and stuff, like maybe like four or five cases, Hall of Fame.
Cool.
And then you had the office where you would go in and pay with your cars in the garage. And that was the lobby. And it had 8x10s of any name you could think of in the business, covering the wall like a Jewish deli or Italian restaurant with celebrity pictures, you know. And so this place existed. It went under. Dynamite D formed SCCW. So we took it on the road. And I came to the show. I introduced myself again because I'd hung around Slammers. You guys need a ring announcer. And I did the Fink impersonation. Yeah, okay, go do the ring crew. I was ring crew, you know. And then we were passing out flyers at the Arrowhead Pond, Anaheim, for a WWF house show. Well, Rob Black happened to be there, and he got a flyer. But now, in the meantime, Rob was working with Paul Heyman. I don't know if you know this part, but the history of Rob was working with Paul Heyman, supplying Heyman girls like Jasmine St. Clair and whoever else to appear on ECW, right? And I get Rob and Paul were working, and Rob was actually going to be like spearheading and taking care of ECW doing West Coast shows. Well, if you know Paul Heyman and if you know Rob Black, you know that relationship is not going to last long. They're going to, yeah, exactly. They're just, in a lot of ways, they're too similar, you know? And so Rob, F this, I'm going to do my own thing. Well, he happened to be at the pond, Anaheim Pond, got our flyer, called Kevin and Patrick Hernandez and Dynamite D. Those were the three guys running SCCW. They had meetings and all that. Long story short, a year later, we became XPW. As far as Rob goes, I was just a ring announcer for SCCW. Well, I go, we had a big meeting at the office in Van Nuys, and I came by my folks' house, and I told them where I was going, and they're like, hey, you got to put a suit on. I'm like, oh, this is just a wrestling thing. No, I go, you should put a suit on. All right, I'll put a suit on. I go over there. All the wrestlers are there, and I'm the only one with the suit on, and Rob's walking around, and he goes to Kevin, who's the guy with the suit? He's like, oh, that's our announcer, Chris Kloss. I was, huh, okay. And that's kind of how it started, you know. I was just the ring announcer. Once we did our first show, we go to the edit bay. Rob goes, Kloss, get in there and call the match. I'm like, well, I'm the ring announcer. He goes, oh, hey, Kevin, we got to get another ring announcer. Kloss, get in there and call the match. Just very casual. That was it. That was it. Wow. I was so that was my first time ever doing it. Was the first ever XPW cassette. I was just looking to be a ring announcer.
Wow. So yeah. Wrestling.
So yeah. Wrestling. Yeah. Yeah.
Got a spot. Let's fill it.
That's
what
it.
What was your relationship like with Black? We've heard a lot of different sources allegedly saying, you know, he was really hard on the talent, and I'm not talking about the Messiah thing, but just in general, he was a very difficult boss to work for. But I've never heard your perspective on that.
Yeah, I mean, he was Rob was Rob. Rob was rough around the edges, man, and he was a ball buster, you know, and politically incorrect for sure. And it was like you kind of felt like you're going into the lion's den when you went in there every week. And it was this kind of this crazy underworld feeling when you were there. But at the same time, everyone knew that we're all going to be there paying our dues. Like, we're all going to get shit on. We're all going to eat crow at times. And in a way, that was like the end of that wave, even in all of professional wrestling, where it was gritty, where it was, hey, you got to pay your dues. It doesn't really relate to this, but it was the end of the wave also with kayfabe being protected. We were still protecting kayfabe at that time. And so that whole era kind of was one and the same, but that was all still going on. But as far as like paying your dues and putting your time in when you gotta eat crow and all that, yeah, dude, XPW was as brutal as I can't imagine anything being more brutal. Hey, get the fuck up, you know, shut the fuck up and do your job and motherfucker, da 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 da. It was just normal talk. And we saw the guys that had a thick skin, the guys that made it, the guys that could take it. I'm not bragging or anything like that, because it sucked, you know, like at times to go in there and guys are dogging on you and then, okay, now action. Like, but that's what it was with everybody. And I look back at that now as, my gosh, man, like these kids today have no idea, no clue. Yeah. That's what they're offended on. Oh my gosh, man, you guys have no idea. Therefore they don't have a thick skin. Like, cause I'll be honest, man, after going through the paying your dues and just being at work with Extreme and Rob and XPW, any job after that was cake. It was like, oh my gosh. It was kind of a drill sergeant mental drill sergeant boot camp. It turned into that, you know. It absolutely turned into that, and so I don't look back at any of that as negative or anything at all, because I'm glad that I, and it's not just Rob. Because again, it was the business was still kind of there as well, you know, but Rob is definitely he's a different cat, completely mm-hmm. different person. I can't mm-hmm. know who I can compare Rob Black to. There's only one, you know, mm-hmm. Personally with me. Yeah. Rob can be an ass, but he'll tell you he's an ass kind of thing. He's not pretending to be something. He's not like being an ass and saying, what do you mean? I'm not an ass. I'm a nice guy. Now he won't even tell you that. He'll tell you, you know? So some guys got along with him a little bit better than other guys, or some guys understood almost the gimmick of Rob Black, which is, whether it's a gimmick or not, I get it. I'll go along with it. And some guys would not get it at all. And they would be like, they'd be gone, you know, or, and it'd be like, gosh, don't take it so seriously. I know it sucks. You got to eat your crow, but dude, don't really take it so seriously. Rob's in this. He likes this. He's doing this. He's having fun. It's a wrestling league. And we, you know, I just looked at it as part of, that's how wrestling was. Now it's, oh, that's the old school. But at the time, that's how wrestling was. It was this like fraternity that you had to like, it was a privilege to be a part of this whole backstage thing. And then the kayfabe thing went along with that. For me, like being able to protect kayfabe, that was exciting to me, that I get to be on this side of the curtain protecting the kayfabe thing. I thought that was an honor. You know, that was, again, like I was a kid. How do these guys back in the curtain at the sports arena, how do they do that? Oh, shit, now I'm back on the side of the curtain. That was awesome to me, you know.
Yeah, I think that's important that you put the context around that, because, you know, for those who didn't grow up in the 80s and 90s, you're not going to understand. Life was people on the street really didn't care about your feelings and your safe space. And wrestling was, as you said, a protected fraternity with it wasn't an easy goal for many people. So with that context, it's important to not judge it in today's societal terms. Wanted to ask you about this question. Of course, this would come up. Do you know about the guys that cut off Messiah's finger?
I know exactly what you guys know. You know, I had Billy on my podcast, Extreme Memories. I was doing for all you fans out there that know about it, but for those that don't, when the pandemic hit, I got a producer friend by the name of George Hermosa, and he approached me with the idea before the pandemic, and then he approached me again about doing Extreme Memories, the history of XPW and all its wrestlers, and doing shoot interviews with everybody. So we did that for over 2 years. YouTube.com/ The Wrestling Chatter. You can archive all the interviews. Extreme Memories and Messiah Billy was on. Had a great talk with him. Great guy. He's doing very well. Beautiful family. So I know what you guys know. You know, I have, you know, everyone's got their suspicions, and pretty I don't know, it kind of seems a little obvious what happened, you know, but I know what everybody, we were all there when it went down, but it was kayfabed from everybody, you know. And so we just, all right, we're here doing our job, and I don't know what to think, what to say. This is all so bizarre, wild, weird when that all happened. Like, what is this that we're a part of? What the hell is, like, it was crazy, you know? And
the Yakuza.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I mean, to this day, like, what the heck, man? Yeah. So, but at the same time, no, we were all, I mean, everyone had their ideas, but no, we were completely kayfabe. And most people, when they were kayfabe, they're like, all right, good, keep me kayfabe. I don't want to know, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Now, XPW was known for, like, almost right from Jump Street, of pushing, you know, the boundaries of the product, even in terms of ECW. You were involved in some many crazy moments in the ring. Aside from the free fall event, which I want to give separate consideration to, what would you say, if you, and this is I know a tough question as well, if you had to boil down to a couple of your most memorable moments of in-ring insanity, what would those be?
Okay, so I'll definitely say that, yeah, free fall, man. That was like I was. Oh, we'll get to that. Well, you know what what was an honor was when Terry Funk came up. We were doing the announcing at the LA Sports Arena for XPW's Go Funk Yourself, and they were fighting all over the place. When Terry Funk got mad, we didn't. He worked everybody. He worked the workers. You know, unbelievable how convincing he was in the back to us. It's unbelievable. That was the first time I saw like a true, like, wow, that's a worker, you know, but at the time I was being worked. Mm-hmm. So when we realized it, it was like, wow, that's wrestling right there. You know? So they were fighting all over. No one knew what, like, cause he got pissed off at something and we all thought he was pissed off at something for real, you know? And then he came up, he didn't have to do this, but he came up to the announce table. Rivera took off running and I'm like, I'm not going to run because I want to be a part of this. But he grabbed me and I'm like, oh, I don't know if this is going to be stiff or what, but he clobbered me and I didn't feel a thing. I don't know if it was because my adrenaline, maybe he did hit me hard because everybody said he didn't, he potatoed you, but I kind of fell into it. But I was like, I don't even know if that was hard because that was my adrenaline. And that was great. In front of a huge crowd. One other one was, it wasn't in front of a live audience, but I had the Blade once and I'll never forget that. I had the gig and it was on XPW TV episode. I had the number, I want to say it's episode 80. If you go to on YouTube, there's a lot of XPW TV episodes up. There's over 130 episodes, but, We were introducing this guy named Crimson, and he was the guy that would come in the middle of a match. He'd have a scream, not a scream mask, but like a white weird jumpsuit and a weird white mask on, and he would just attack guys with box cutters, and they would blade, and he would leave, and who the hell was that, you know? So he'd already came in the middle of like two or three matches. We were talking about him on the outro of XPW in the studio, and now he comes into the studio and he attacks the announcer. So I did that. They asked me like, "Hey, you want a gig?" I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I didn't want to." But then I'm like, "You know what? This is like a bucket list wrestling thing. Okay, I'll do it." And like some of the boys were there: Supreme, Chaos, Webb was always there doing the editing. I can't remember who else. And the guy who was Crimson. And they're like, yeah, come on in, Klaus. Like I popped my cherry. Like, oh, this is going to be awesome. Okay, this is what you do. And then I had to drink like six or seven beers, Budweiser's, I remember, to thin my blood, then take aspirin. So when I'm doing the wraparounds, like in the suit and tie, like I'm watching like, oh, shoot, I'm drunk right there. Like, but I was playing it straight. And then I go, he tacks me. And I'm like, all right, here we go. And I do that, and I'm like, oh, I didn't feel anything. I start going. And then he goes, grabs me, and I'm like, am I good? He's like, oh, shit, yeah, you're good. No more. Fuck, don't. You're fine, you know? That, I remember that. That was definitely memorable. I was finishing up college, too, at the time at Cal State Northridge. And I'm going back in Monday morning.
With a gig mark.
Yeah. Scabs all over. Like, what the hell happened to you? You
know? That's awesome.
Yeah, those two moments. I mean, there were just so many wild shows. You know, like at Birmingham High at the Grand Olympic Auditorium, where we would just end the night with, like, fire, blood everywhere, you know, and I remember it was some shows were just spectacular. Like there were some great live events, which ended up being put on DVD and then sporadic matches on television, our weekly television show. But just insane nights where it's like, how did we pull this off? What the hell just happened? It was wild and exciting being a part of it. I'll be honest, because I would turn into a fan, you know, watching some of these shows, like, oh, that was amazing, you know, like, you know, and, you know, we were a part of something special, you know, we knew it, and we had that fan base, and, you know, being on television absolutely helped, of course, and that in itself was special to be a part of that.
Yeah, no doubt, which history seems to bear out as well. You touched on the volatile personalities that were our Rob Black and Paul Heyman. When you look back from your recollection, two-part question, when did that rivalry seem to heat up? And of course, where were you during the infamous, heat wave incident?
Well, I was ringside. I was right there in at ground zero, literally on the ground floor at the Grand Olympic. Let me see if I get this right. It was Supreme, Christy Mist, myself, Homeless Jimmy, Messiah, and there was one more down there with us. I can't, man, why am I blanking on this? So Chaos, Jimmy, Messiah, Christy. Oh, maybe that was it. Supreme and myself. Dang, I if I'm forgetting somebody, I it'll come back to me. But anyway, we were the ones down ringside, and then up top there were Kevin Kleinrock and the other part of the crew was up there. But man, that was a crazy wild night too. Like when we went in there, like, whoa, like it was weird. It was like, we're here, we're at the show, but in a weird way, like, I mean, it was like a weird dream or a weird scenario where when you're a kid and you're like, you're afraid of a public speaking or something and people are kind of glaring at you. Like we were there. There was the show, but it felt like 1,000 people were kind of like, okay, kind of looking at us. Like it was kind of weird. Never experienced anything like that before or since. But we just kind of ended up there. We kind of like one thing led to another. We didn't really plan much out. We're just like, oh, we got tickets. Great. Oh, we're going to the show. Great. Oh, we're going to sit right here. Okay, cool. What? We got to turn our XPW shirts inside out. Okay, we'll do that. Okay, we're all going to sit here. Yeah, we're all going to kayfabe. Okay. It's just kind of one thing, one foot in front of the other as far as getting to where we got. And unfortunately, Kevin was the one that bought those ringside tickets. And when you look at the map, here's the ring, here's the floor seats. You had a flip of a coin to pick which side to sit on for where to be on the hard cam. Mm-hmm. And you want to be an opposite hard cam if you want to be on television. Well, Kevin just picked one of the two sides. And unfortunately, that was happened to be the same side as the hard cam. So you couldn't really see us unless the camera kind of panned by us. But yeah, I will admit, man, that was a scary moment because we were way outnumbered. And then the fans, there were some XPW fans in there, but at the time it was mostly ECW fans. So when we got escorted out, it was are these fans going to kind of come down on us here? Like, remember, this was a different time. Not only in wrestling, but it felt more controlled and more people weren't afraid to throw down as much as they are now, really. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it wasn't that abnormal for a fight to break out in an arena. And now, you know, everyone's got a camera. Everyone's going to call law enforcement, or it was just a different time. And I realize that even more now, looking back, comparing it to today. But yeah, dude, that was a crazy moment. But we all got caught up, and a lot of it justifiably, a lot of it like, oh, maybe we should, you know, shouldn't have got caught up that much. But a lot of it was we all felt hey, man, you know, they are coming into our backyard. Hey, we are making waves right now. We are doing our own thing. And the first major city they go into that's out of their normal comfort zone, really, it's going to be LA, really. And it's right before we were doing those shows, when we were doing shows at the LA Sports Arena, TV was taken off for us. So we did take exception to it. And there was a lot of feeling of that from all of us performers. So we were really like, hey, we were protecting our team, our baby. And so there was a lot of realism in that whole heat waves deal, you know.
Francina said that somebody grabbed her or something like that, and that's what started the whole thing. Is that your recollection at all? Or
I don't. I remember Joey Styles, who I became friends with later, by the way. Great guy. Joey's very cool. No, that was something that Joey had to say, because they were not going to acknowledge us on the pay-per-view. Oh. At all. They were not going to acknowledge us. And and because they didn't acknowledge us, it actually made the fans wonder even more. Like, what really did happen here? No, that was just something they had to say. But if a fan did grab her, it wasn't one of us, for sure. It was not. We're at the end of the day, we're all workers. We're not gonna let me tell you, know. But I don't think anybody grabbed her. We didn't see any of that. She wasn't even really near the us, you know. Just was the security that came near us. And the boys, some of the boys that came, some of the wrestlers that came out that weren't involved in that match of Dreamer and Just Incredible. Those were the guys that kind of got involved, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard to imagine something like that happening at a show, in this day and age, for sure.
And you know, so yeah, and you know what, Jack, too, also, that was like the realism of that invasion, looking back, was like, you know, there's so many invasion angles, but this was actually executed as an invasion, you know. And one of the things that fans, I didn't understand at the time, like when we left, like, holy crap, did that just happen? Did we just do that? Oh, what's going to be the feedback of this? And when it came out across as negative, oh, that was messed up that you guys did that. That was lame. I couldn't believe it, because it was like, we were like, you know, all these fans want these invasion angles, because these invasion angles are awesome. So they recreate them. Well, shit, man, we just did one for real. What do you mean you don't like it? You know, like, why would you shit on this when this is what we want, you know? So, but anyway, it was cooler to like ECW at that time than it was to like XPW.
Well, you're right. I often thought that. Why the heck was that not turned into a legit money-making angle, notwithstanding the animosity? Like, that's money right there.
At the end of the day, it's money. Like, why wouldn't they just secretly work something and work all of us? Mm-hmm. I looking back, I would not take exception. I would, please work me so I can be a part of it, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what was it like when the ECW talents eventually started, you know, filtering into XPW? I'm thinking of Sabu, New Jack, Shane Douglas, et cetera, Candido, to name a few. What was that? Was that a little tense? Because we think about, you know, the WWE when they absorbed WCW and they got the cold shoulder and they were marginalized and blah, blah, blah. What was that like for XPW?
Well, I mean, there is really, as far as from where I stood, there wasn't any tension. I mean, there was when Joey Styles came in at first, you know. So I can't speak for the wrestlers, because if there was a little tension with me and Joey Styles, I'm sure there was tension with, let's say, Sandman and Supreme, for example, or Vic Grimes and Pogo the Clown, you know. Just Incredible and Homeless Jimmy. We had our homegrown talent, and there was, I remember when Shane Douglas did his famous speech at the Palace, like, you know, calling Ric Flair on the phone and you know, XPW has arrived, and we were all watching that at our meeting room in Van Nuys. We'd have a Tuesday night meeting, and then Rivera and I would come in every Wednesday for television. But Rob, like after that Palace show with Shane Douglas, it was like, Rob, all right, everybody sit down, lights out. And we watched that interview, and it was like, wow, this is like, I mean, for Shane Douglas at that time to do an interview shoot almost style at the time was a big deal. Okay, there we go. And then, I remember feeling that the boys were a little bit like, oh, the boys don't totally like this right now. You know what I mean? And so that was, it is what it is. But overall, I think we did a good job not just putting our homegrown guys down on the bottom scraps and putting ECW. Everybody kind of mixed, coincided. You know, Juventud Guerrero would fight Chaos. Sandman would fight Supreme. So we definitely, I thought Kevin and Rob did a good job putting everybody on the same playing field, which was very important to do in order to make XPW seem legit. If we brought all these guys in and yeah, we used them, they're big names, we would be diminishing the league by not intermixing our own guys who maybe were not seen as much a big time, but therefore eventually would be because they're on the same playing field. I thought that was very important. A lot of leagues didn't do that. They would just be blinded and kind of mark out for these big names and not have the business sense to intermix them. And I thought Kevin and Rob did a good job with that.
Yeah, absolutely. What are your thoughts on the announcement this year of...
I'm not hearing you here.
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Oh, I that's weird.
Can't hear me now?
Can't hear you, no.
Oh, boy.
That's very strange. So sorry.
No worries. How about now?
Okay, now?
I can hear you.
Can
you
hear me? I see your lips moving, but I can't. I'm not making you out.
Why don't you jump back in?
How about now?
I can hear you. Can you hear me? No,
Yeah, my mic's on. That's weird.
You're not muted either. Let me
exit the studio and come back. Okay, sorry, folks. Let me do that. 1 second.
No worries. These are the issues that we encounter using StreamYard, unfortunately, especially if you're doing an interview on a phone. If you get a call or a text, what happens is we sometimes lose video and audio or both. So hopefully this will be resolved when Chris comes back. Here we go right now.
Yep.
Can you hear me now?
All right. Thank you.
I hear me?
Yes.
Oh, sir. Excellent. I was just, thank you. No worries. I was just telling the fans that sometimes happens when you get a call or a text. I just wanted to ask you about your thoughts on Paul Heyman being inducted into the Hall of Fame, WWE Hall of Fame this year, and whether or not you had any interactions with him over the years.
I honestly don't think I ever met him. I don't think we ever met. Because even in the Heatwave thing, he came out, he confronted a few guys. Messiah was one of them. Chaos was one of them. And I was at the other end of the building in the other brawl, you know? Look, there were so many guys at the Heatwave thing that ended up working, like you said, for XPW. Like you said before too, with Rob and Paul doing something, if there's money to be made, same thing. When ECW folded, it was all, you know, come and make your money in XPW. It really exposed a little bit that it was not a work, you know, the animosity, but kind of people thought it was a little bit because the guys came. No, wrestling is just you work, you know. Aside from that, I don't think I ever met him. If I did, it was like somewhere in passing, but I don't think I did. Hey, look, I really am a fan of his old stuff, Polly Dangerously with the phone. Like,
Me too.
I love all that stuff, man. And so just that alone, and then you have to give it up for him for what he did in the creation of ECW. You can't take that anything away, whether you're a fan of that type of wrestling or not. And just to let you know, most people in XPW were products of the 80s, really. And we were all in this extreme league. We really were all WWF old school regular wrestling guys. We weren't these extreme guys, but that was the product that we were a part of at the time. So I'm saying that whether you're a fan of the extreme style or not, he definitely deserves to be there for what he did. In an independent sense, with ECW rising up the way it did, and then just his work back in the 80s, like so, and of course being in Philly, perfect setting right there.
Yeah, makes sense. So I wanted to definitely devote some singular time to the free fall event at the Olympic between that scaffold match between New Jack and Vic Grimes, which I think there's an argument to be made is even more so than Foley off the cage, I think is the most extreme bump ever in professional wrestling. And a lot of fans that maybe not as familiar with XPW's catalog, look to that and think of XPW. Can you please talk about your understanding of how that went down and when you saw that occur?
First off, out of body experience. I remember I'll get to the lead up, but when it happened, when it was like happening, and we were announcing it live. We didn't do all the shows live, but some of the shows we do the play by play. It would be set up for us to do live. I remember walking into the arena, and I don't know how to explain this, Jack, but like something intuitively, there was this inner knowledge of what this was. I know it sounds weird, but it's like I felt like I almost like an out of body experience where I came to that place from the future because I knew, wow, I get to go back in time to this big moment in wrestling history. I don't know how to explain. I know it sounds a little off the wall, but I knew that this was a huge moment, not just another extreme wild XPW night of action, which there were a lot of. But that this was what like this is a big time moment in pro wrestling history. Like I was coming in and out of that, in and out of that, and just being there doing it. And then back into this, it was like an out-of-body experience watching, looking up at the scaffold. Leading up to the event, oh, okay, yeah, I remember that ECW thing they did. Oh, we're gonna reenact that kind of, oh, 40 feet? How high is 40 feet? Bro, it is high. Oh, yeah, they've never done that before. Oh, okay. And I remember going to the arena, seeing the scaffold, seeing Vic. See, that's another thing too. You have your matches that it's a scary stunt. But then when you got the two guys that really kind of have beef with each other, and you see that in the back, whether they're working it or not, but didn't matter because it's like, well, shit, Jack didn't want to be around Vic. Vic's over here kind of pacing, hoping everything's going to be okay. So it was almost a show in itself in the back. Like if there was a documentary crew there, oh my gosh, it would this iconic moment would have even been more iconic, kind of like the Montreal screw job when you saw in the back how there was still so much tension. They only had a documentary crew in the back for that event to see, like, oh, these guys really are not talking to each other and they're hating on each other, especially Jack, because he was still pissed off that their stunt in ECW went bad and blamed Vic for it. So and Vic was scared shitless. And Vic, great guy, Vic Grimes, by the way, one of the sweetest guys in the business, right? So we all know this, and now we're going out there. And I just remember when he fell, that out of body experience, feeling like it was so strong. And I just felt like I came back through a portal of time to, like, part of me came back to recreate and relive this crazy, impactful, one of the craziest moments in pro wrestling history. Like, I just knew it. That's where we were at. I knew that that's what this was at the time. I don't know how to explain it. I knew it, that this was that one of the craziest, wildest moments in pro wrestling history. I'm like, wow, this is it. I'm here. This is where it's happening. And we're here right now. And so when he came down and I did the scream, and I just, at that point, I just put the headphones down and I'm like, okay, we said enough. We don't need to say anymore, you know? And we just kind of ran where the broadcast booth was on the loge section. We kind of ran down by the curtain against the fence where the floor seats start. and we were just watching, well, along with some of the fans right there. We were just watching and hoping to God he was okay. And everyone's feeling, everyone's face was like, what the hell did we just witness? Even the fans, like, is some people like, is this a little too far? Wow, this was awesome. You knew you were a part of history if you were there that night. You knew it. And I don't think I was the only one that felt that.
No, and the announcement about please clear the arena, that added to the whole realism of the situation for sure.
And it was, because we didn't know how severe his fall was. We knew he was alive still, thank God. But we didn't know if, like, he was going to die. You know, we didn't know if he, like, broke his neck and he's going to be paraplegic. We didn't know any of that. And we didn't have any concern for the rest of the boys, the fans. We just wanted to get everybody out of the way, out of there. We didn't want a riot on our hand. We didn't want anyone to, again, get in the way of, like, the paramedics and whatever needed to be done. So I will tell you, that was an incredible moment in history. And again, I knew somehow, I didn't know how I knew, but I knew that this was, it's like if you take a time machine and you go back to crazy moments in history and you know that you're witnessing that. Well, that's what I felt like at that night. It's hard to explain, but I just knew that that was, and it has got to be the craziest, right? I think.
I don't even think it's close.
Yeah.
I think it's number one. I don't think it'll let, well, I shouldn't say that with people falling through glass and onto light tubes and et cetera, but still, I don't think that's ever going to be, that's ever going to be topped.
And not only that, but all these other high falls, I'm not taking anything away from, like, you know, your Hardys and your Shane McMahons, but those are so controlled and regulated. This was like, yeah, I guess the ring goes right here. Yeah, I guess the tables go right here. Yeah, and again, New Jack, unstable, being the guy, and the whole, again, if you had a film crew, I never really thought about this before this interview, but if you had a film crew in the back leading up, it would be even more of a crazy moment in pro wrestling history. If you would have had a film crew in the back, as crazy as that moment, maybe, like you said, number one, it would be 10 times crazier had we had a documentary film crew in the back looking at the guys, looking at all of us, Vic, Jack. It would be even, it would add to it even more. I never thought about that until just now.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that Grimes was, what, 350, 360 pounds, and not many high flyers. He's just the size of three wrestlers, most of the wrestlers today. So that just adds to it as well. Did you know in the back that Jack was packing a stun gun?
Nope.
And did you have an opportunity to see him afterwards when he was, well, in interviews, he says, mission accomplished, see you XPW.
Right. That's kind of what it was. Like, you owe me because you know, I can't remember the extent of his injury when Grimes and ECW, he got from the height that they were at, he got fright enough to where he just let go a little too late, And man, dude, he his hip did come down on Jack's head on the concrete. Jack's
lucky. And apparently caused some brain fluid and ocular damage in the whole nine yards.
Yeah,
because he chickened out.
Yeah. Then that was how Jack looked at it. And so all that was real. All that was 100% real. And Jack's animosity toward him, that was real. But no, I didn't get a chance to talk to Jack. Jack had his own circle and it was very small and he did his own thing. And a lot of times when his job was done, he got his money and left. So that was just another night where he did that. And, no, I never got to really talk to him. I really never talked to him too much until Cold Day in Hell. That was the most I talked to him was at that show. But, that was reunion show in 2008. But, no, I didn't. I don't think many people did talk to Jack other than his circle that night. Vic obviously went to the hospital. But man, it was just, we knew after that happened and after they edited it. And then when I went into TV and they put it up there, like, oh my gosh, I don't know if this is right, but this is going to put us over the top. And it did, you know, everyone was talking about it and we ourselves couldn't believe what we just pulled off. Couldn't believe it. And we're so lucky, like you said, so freaking lucky is Vic hit the ring the way he did, hit the tables the way he did, bounce back in off of those top ropes. Unbelievably fortunate and lucky. I mean, he would have died if he didn't hit those ropes. He would have died. And you think about this too. The ring wasn't that far away from the freaking front row fans, from the first five rows of fans. I mean, looking back in retrospect, so much could have gone so wrong.
Yeah, it's too bad Jack has unfortunately passed on, because if something would warrant a documentary treatment, it would be that whole deal leading up to it and the aftermath. I'm assuming you saw the Dark Side of the Ring on XPW and just wanted to get you were in it for a bit. Did they talk to you ever about doing an interview, and what were your thoughts on the final product?
Yes, I did see it. We actually did a live a recap show on Extreme Memories. So I had about 10, including myself, there were about 10 of us. Lou Cox, Joey Chaos, Mike Hartsfield, Billy Messiah, Patrick Hernandez, Homeless Jimmy, Sylvia. I forgive me if I'm missing whoever else, but that was a lot of fun. We did that. We watched it and we all did a little recap and kind of dissected what was true and what was not true in the documentary. So that's on Extreme Memories. You can archive that youtube.com/thewrestlingchatter and go ahead and check that episode out. Dark Side of the Ring, Extreme Memories recap show. I did watch it. Absolutely. They did. They actually contacted me. The producers contacted me. When they were filming out here in LA, they had a studio that they rented out, and this was at the height of the pandemic. So unfortunately, at that time, there were so many rules where they could only have a certain amount of people in that studio at a time. And I think they only had that studio for 2 days. So there were a handful that were in there that got interviewed on camera, and there were, I don't know who else, but there were myself and a bunch of others that got interviewed over the phone. So I had about an hour long conversation / interview with one of the producers, and they were just asking me a lot of questions, and I didn't know if they were going to be able to call me in or not. They didn't know at all. They didn't know at all either. But they never did, and I was fine with that. I was happy to give them my 2 cents over the phone, and they were already watching my Extreme Memory show, and so they're, oh, yeah, we're watching your show now, too. And I did, like, a phone interview for, like, 45 minutes to an hour. And so I guess there was a lot of hearsay that I shared with them that ended up being the information that they put in to some of the document or some of the episode. I thought it was, as far as what you asked, what I thought of it. I mean, as far as everything that was accurate, it was very well done. some of the stuff, I mean, if you ask me, maybe I'll remember, but I just remember thinking some of the stuff was a little over-exaggerated, but not much. That was the world that it was. It was a weird Wild West, girls everywhere, porn going on, and yet we're doing this thing we all love, pro wrestling. Like, how in the world did we get here, you know? and so yeah, a lot of that was completely legit. And I don't think any of us will ever, I don't even think that world will ever be recreated again the way even if you did have a porn guy that wanted to start a wrestling league, I still don't think you're gonna see that again. We're so in so many ways at the end of that era, the end of that Wild West wave of the business, which coincides with craziness, keeping kayfabe alive, paying your dues, all that. We were kind of at the bookend of that era, and that was part of it, you know, the Wild West. And and I don't think we're ever going to see that again, you know. And we didn't know we were at the end of that wave. We you know, until like, what, 4 or 5 years later, it's like, wow, the business really has changed, you know.
Yeah, it got immeasurably more boring. Notwithstanding the reunion, Cold Day in Hell, but I wanted to ask you for sure. Were you approached about the recent XPW restart? And are you familiar with some of the stuff that's out there that's kind of raising some eyebrows? So two-part question, please.
Yeah, I was a part of it. I was there for the first year of existence. I went to the first show out in New York, first time Rob and I had reunited. We did that show, and then I was involved with pretty much every show after that for about a year. All I want to say about that is I didn't like the way Rob did business, and something as far as a disagreement happened. So unfortunately, we kind of cut ties, and that's just where we stand right now. That's just the way it is. And as far as where the league is now and where it was going, I don't know if it'll ever, like we said, just in the last segment there, I don't think we'll ever see that again as far as the backstage stuff goes. So I don't know if we're ever going to see that as far as how the product unfolded back in the day. I just don't see it happening. Mm-hmm. And there were some things that it was fun to be a part of again. In some ways it was felt like a little bit, it felt big time again, you know, in some avenues. And then there were things that were just like completely like ridiculous, like, you know, syringe in the testicles and all this stuff. And
yeah, that's and what like, comes to mind off the bat. Right. Right.
Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, the shock value I remembered back in the day, but this is just done for the sake of doing it. It's not even anything that's impactful. It's just, you know, if we did stuff back in the day, there was more of a reason behind it for doing it. And I'm all for, if it makes sense, do it. And if the performer has no problem, if he's willingly doing it, whatever it is, it's consensual, then I have never have a problem with any of that. But again, what are we doing here? You know, that wasn't the reason, you know, I didn't leave because of that, but maybe it was a part of it subconsciously, but I don't know. But no, it was just a business thing that we kind of had a falling out with and disagreed on. So I am not watching it now. I don't really, you can ask me what was really going on with it now, but it was exciting. I was happy for Rob that he brought it back, and I thought it was very cool. And in the original concept he had, I was kind of like, wow, you can't cancel what was canceled. Like, from out the gate, it was like, okay, that's interesting. This is a good time to bring it back when you're really not supposed to be bringing it back. I was on board with that. And but I don't know if I was completely down with everything that was executed. But some of the stuff I was. And I hope it turns a corner and people start liking it and everybody is, you know, making their money and having fun doing it and having fun watching it. But Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this can be recreated. I don't know if we can see 99 to 2003, even the 2008 and 9 reunion shows. I don't know. And not to say that we haven't seen it yet, that it's not possible, but I don't know. I know as much as you and all the people watching.
Yeah, it seems like a lifetime ago in many ways, and I'm not sure it's getting the traction that one would expect with the name, but we shall see. Any product that provides work for the boys and others is a good thing, where I sit. Wanted to switch gears and ask you about your other venture that really captured my imagination when it came out with was Wrestling Society X. Could you just talk about how that came together in terms of concept and execution?
Okay, so when XPW folded, I had an opportunity to move to New York City and did a Broadway show. The timing couldn't have been better because I didn't have weekly television. And then when I came back to LA, finished college, I reconnected with Kevin Kleinrock, and we were doing indie shows. He did an SCCW reunion show back in 05, which Vince Russo and Ed Ferreira were a part of. Ferreira was a Slammers alumni, Slammers Wrestling Gym. Somehow Kevin got hooked up with Houston Curtis, who was the CEO of a company called Big Vision Entertainment. And if you watch the movie Molly's Game, one of the gamblers in the movie was based on Houston. He was a big time into the Phil Hellmuth, Annie Duke, all that, the major poker players. And so Kevin was working for him. Houston was a fairly well-known producer in the industry. He was going to have a meeting one day for MTV I can't remember if it was a poker show, but he was going. And Kevin, as Houston was leaving the office, Kevin was already working for him. Oh, by the way, Houston, can you just mention this to these guys? I have an idea for a wrestling show that's like underground in a bunker, but we have like rock music playing while we're hiding away from the public, and it's a cool vibe. Well, long story short, Houston came back with the original meeting planned for his TV show. They didn't like, oh, but Kevin, they liked your idea for wrestling down in a bunker, right? So long story short, the pilot ended up getting greenlit. We did the pilot, and not too long after that, they wanted to go ahead and keep it going because the pilot was very successful, and mm-hmm. and it looked great. I mean, mm-hmm. it looked amazing. And
what a roster!
And the roster was stacked. Yeah, I mean stacked. Even the non-wrestling fan, like, it just looked for the time. Even now, it holds up, I think. But it just looked amazing, right? And different. And I think the half hour, it was only on for a half hour, but I think that concept on paper was great for the non-wrestling fan. You can only take so much wrestling, right? That was a concept that made sense on paper, at least. But when we got greenlit to do the entire season, all right, this is it. And it was very professional, very well done. The only gripe that we had was when MTV wanted to step in and they just did not know wrestling. I mean, they knew television. They knew television, but man, oh man, every idea that they had for pro wrestling did not make sense for the psychology, for what we're going to, you know, how this is going to translate to next week's action type thing. That was the frustrating part of the whole deal, because it's like we were in the offices in Burbank, which was literally right across the street from where the Tonight Show recorded. And we would be in these meetings and, you know, I'd come in to do the voiceover to fix certain things and all that. And the execs would be like, we would have so much potential. The show looks great. Oh my gosh, look where we're going. And they'd have to step in and tweak something. And that, man, that one little screw, that's all they're taking out is one screw, but then the whole thing falls apart from that one screw. And that was the only thing on that job that was, I remember being frustrating. Everything else was great. Everybody was professional. again, getting to work with all these talent, I mean, really talented performers, a lot of future stars, and amazing. And the payday was great. You know, I was like, this is awesome. Okay. I'm not complaining on that front at all. Unfortunately, what happened, the big break, backbreaker for the show was halfway through the season, the production, they just did a clean house sweep of MTV producers. Wrestling Society X was brought on board because they wanted to get that male audience back for MTV that they lost when Jackass left. So this was the attempt with that. Well, halfway through the season, they revamped the whole production team. New production crew came in, and they did away with getting the male audience back. They went back to the teen. My mom's a teen, pregnant, you know, shows, and the rest was history. We all know what happened to MTV. So the writing was on the wall about episode three or four, maybe five, and that was also the time where the fireball, they couldn't show fire with Vampiro's eyes, and it just, everything was kind of shit. The writing's on the wall. They took something that already looked good and they made it look a little corny at times that was already produced to work and lead right into the second season. But it never happened. Unfortunately, the writing on the wall with changing the network and from let's get that male audience back, that was the true nail in the coffin, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but a great experience, like amazing working in television in that sense. I mean, I did it with XPW, but now this is a complete different level. You know, you have all different camera angles. You have, you know, these cranes coming in, the live shot of the arena and the lighting and it like really top notch, professionally done. And a great experience as far as just working in television and, again, being able to produce alongside of Houston and Kevin and getting a little bit more hands-on as far as a producer is concerned. Great, great experience. Very thankful.
Yeah, and that's definitely a shame because here we are, you know, still talking about it so many years later. So obviously it was... you know, an innovative, maybe the argument could have been made that it was a little before its time, but
I agree. Yeah,
definitely memorable. You know, Chris, you've been extremely generous with your time, but I wanted to ask you before we wrap up your thoughts on what we call pro wrestling today, the not talking about independent wrestling or anything else other than the big two, WWE, which seems to be folk, you know, they're doing better business than ever, but they have, you know, 20, 30 minute soliloquies in their television product. And then A&E is, you know, very heavy on, you know, high spots and I keep calling it A&E, but it's AEW. Yeah,
I know you're good.
That's a Freudian slip maybe.
Right.
But in terms of, you know, going to the other sort of extreme, do you watch the big two today? And if so, what do you think?
I haven't been watching. I just caught up with other things in my life. I last couple of years I've been a little more out of it. It was hard to. I don't know. There's multiple reasons. You know, once you work in the business, it's really at times can be difficult to immerse yourself and be that fan again because you see everything. You know, you understand what they're doing, and then if you're critiquing it, it's even harder. I don't watch right now. I kind of get back into it here and there. Usually this is, you know, Royal Rumble, WrestleMania is the time of year you get back into it. This is the first year where I kind of have it. But I've seen enough to where I know, look, I guess what frustrates me about it is I understand now and know exactly how limited they are in certain areas of what they can do. I know how limited they are, and to me, the it's hard to get back into it when I know that Wild West, because it didn't just only apply to XPW, it applied to the entire business we just happened to be in a porn office when it was, you know, but it's unfortunate that wrestling is hindered and limited and suppressed and censored and their creativity is kind of condensed now as opposed to how it used to be. And when I see that, it really makes it hard for me to like immerse myself into the product. You know, wrestling was one of the last forms of mainstream entertainment that was able to get away with politically incorrect things, for example. Like when movies and television, even music, right, to a degree, when those were, you know, you see through time when they were, okay, you were only allowed to do this. You weren't really allowed to say certain things, even in R-rated movies. Wrestling still had the green light to do it when TV and movies were starting to become monitored and censored and limited, right? And the crazy, outlandish things, controversial things it could say. Pro wrestling, I know this from experience with people knocking at critics and all this, we would always come back with, and the industry would too, like, well, you guys do know that pro wrestling is a work. It's, and I like to say the word fake, but it's a show. It's a spectacle. It's entertainment. And then they would come back with, oh, you know what? I don't think it's real. Do you think it's real? No. I don't think it's real. Yeah. You're stupid if you think it's real. Okay. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. Wrestling. I know it's fake. So go ahead and keep doing what you're doing. You know, so wrestling got this in a weird way. It got a longer green light to be able to be free and do outlandish, which controversial now things. So when that fully went away for me, that's not everything that is what wrestling's about, but that's a big part of it that I miss. But the performance, I mean, look, in Wrestling Society X, we had great performers. It was hard to put all that psychology in a 30-minute show, but the performers were unbelievable. So I have an appreciation for that. Whether it was AEW or WWE today, presenting that absolutely phenomenal athleticism, the psychology and the when someone's being limited in a pro wrestling world, you can really see them acting now, you know, and that is a part that I think hinders the business, hinders the creativity, and that's the biggest takeaway for me for where the business is at today.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Where can the fans keep up with, two-part question, where can they find you on social media platforms? And please tell us, in addition to your works on YouTube, what do you have going on that the fans can be aware of and support?
Okay, so I'm mainly on Facebook. My name, KR, like you see right here on the screen, KRISKLOSS. Hit me up on my instant messenger. We're on hiatus now with the Wrestling Chatter, but check out those shows again, youtube.com/ the Wrestling Chatter. All those episodes are archived. We're kind of talking about getting that going again. Hopefully we will. Wrestling, I'm doing shows here and there. Go down to the South. I do shows in all over SoCal. I got one tonight in Chatsworth, California. youtube.com/millenniumprowrestling. Check those shows out. As far as what I do, I do work for charities. I'm an auctioneer. I do charity auctions,
right?
Celebrity charity auctions. I just did one with Gene Simmons not too long ago, William Shatner, Sugar Ray Leonard. That was an honor. So we raise money for all sorts of different nonprofits, whether it be schools, whether it be youth programs, environmental causes, you name it, all up and down the gamut for schools, nonprofits, and raise money for worthwhile causes. And I'm with KMK Auctions. And again, you can just go to my Facebook, hit me up on Instant Messenger if you know, or if you are a nonprofit and want to do a fundraiser. And that's what I do now. So I'm still on the microphone with the auctioning. Yeah. Thank you. And but yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, this is a lot of fun going down memory lane. And, you know, there's so much to cover. There's just so much that we could go over. And I mean, we didn't even talk about Member Supreme got lit on fire. I mean, yes. that was another one where I couldn't believe what I was watching. And you could smell the burnt flesh all the way up into the loge section. And there's so many moments, you know. I mean, almost
Messiah every moment. Got some flesh burned there too, did he not?
I'm sorry?
Messiah got burned in that one too, did he not?
No, that was the Enterprise in Supreme. That was Chaos, Steve Rosano, and that was at the Grand Olympic when he was running around the ring and they were trying to put him out in the
fireworks. Oh yeah. I thought that was Messiah on the other side. No, I must be mistaken.
No, that was the Enterprise with GQ Money, Rosano, Veronica Kane, and Chaos. Yeah, that was, I'm almost 95% sure on that one.
Okay.
But yeah, so much to cover, man. And oh my gosh, man, it is crazy to look back and think what we were a part of. I mean, it really is unbelievable. I kind of still, that did happen, you know?
Well, and that's part of the mission of Cheap Heat Productions. And this podcast is to fully document the history of the business, because a lot of us, myself included, will, you know, never be convinced that that wasn't a really, as we've been talking about, a really golden era in the industry. And we're still talking about these moments X number of decades later. So that must say something.
I mean, for everything that I've been involved in throughout the years, you made a good point. You can really pick out what were the impactful moments, and it's the ones that we're still talking about. Because there are a ton of stuff that I've done throughout the years that completely forgotten, you know, but not this at all. And you know, we were just so privileged to be a part of that at a young age when we were all in the business, getting a tremendous education on how this industry and how television works. Just unbelievable experience.
Well, sir, I definitely appreciate your time. It's been fascinating. I look forward to it. And maybe if you have the time, I know you're a busy man, we can do a part two and cover some of the other moments that we didn't hit. But until then, thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Thank you very much, Jack. It's a pleasure. And it's been a lot of fun and a little bit of a journey through time. Going down memory lane. So pleasure's all mine, my friend.
Appreciate it. Well, fans, that's it for this edition of the Cheap Heat Productions Pro Wrestling Podcast. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. And if you haven't, make sure you hit subscribe and please like these videos, and you will stay on top of all the great content that Cheap Heat Productions has coming for you. Until next time, take care, everybody.